13 Questions by Man Transcending. Manhood in the Digital Age.
Welcome back to the 13 Questions podcast. This week, we got a real treat. We got interviewer extraordinaire, Adam Loyal, the man with the plan himself, who, of course, as you know, has conducted a ton of the interviews, most of the interviews here for the show. Good friend of mine, good friend of ours, known Adam for years. Met him in Minneapolis, Minnesota, back in what it must have been, 2014, somewhere around there, I believe.
2013, maybe.
You probably met him in 2013, but I wasn't at the 2013 one.
Right, yeah. Actually, 2012, then we met him. We must have met him in the first one.
I don't think he was at the Von Dack.
Oh, you sure?
I don't remember him from there.
Okay.
I think 2013 was the first one he went to. Anyway, yeah, friend of the show, interviewer, friend of ours, all around great cat. So probably maybe this will be the one that gets you guys to finally go sign up. Head over to 13questionspodcast.com, hit the sign up button so you can get Adam's extension. Did you do the interview?
Did I? Yeah, think so.
Yeah, you interviewed. It's been a while. Eh? Yeah. He's been waiting for an intro forever. Feel terrible. But Graham got it out. So the bonus extension, good one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there you go. Head over to 13questionspodcast.com, sign up, get the bonus extension to Adam's podcast here, get access to the Discord, all that other great stuff's over on the sign-up page. Another thing I did want to mention is I do got a special show coming up. I think it's about time we're going to start venturing outside the confines of 13 Questions, do some special shows, maybe one a month or something like that, start doing some more open interviews like Duncan Trussell was suggesting. So I've lined up a friend of the show, Dr. Robert Glover, and friend of the show, David Feldman. And we're going to do a little round table with those guys. And they're going to spend some time talking about just general manhood, being a man, you know, what women are actually looking for in men, what guys are getting wrong most of the time, you know, what the culture's fucked up for us, all that fun stuff. So look forward to that episode. I think we're going to probably record around the 15th of October. So that'll probably come out, third week of October.
That'd be great with those two.
Oh, yeah, it's good. Yeah. Glover's great. And so is David. So this should be a good show. What else we got? I think that's about it. You wanted to give us a little rundown of Mr. Adam Loyal?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Adam, you know, in Dungeons and Dragons, he plays a rogue, usually likes to hide a lot. I thought I'd throw that in there as a joke.
He's a hider?
Yeah, he's a hider. Hide in the back. Wait for his opportunity to attack.
As you do.
Yeah. Pretty funny. It's just an ongoing joke, so I thought I'd throw it in there. No, I mean, Adam, I remember Adam from way back. Met him at those symposiums that we went to before we started the podcast, the Grimerica show, which was now like 6.5 years ago. So, I mean, you know, Adam's bio doesn't even have a lot about podcasting in there, but he's been like deep into podcasting and listening to podcasts and loving that whole scene for, I don't know, 7 to 10 years probably. And we met him at conferences and we just hang out for hours chatting with people about stuff, ancient mysteries and alternative history and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it's Adam who got me to originally read How to Fail at Everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He sent me some garbled up audiobook of it.
Really?
Yeah. And I just ended up, I was like, well, I'm just going to buy the real audiobook because this is a mess to try and listen to. But yeah.
What do you mean by garbled up audiobook?
He had it, like he had an old copy of it from back in the day. He tried sending it to me on a Google Drive or something like that, but it was like, there was no way to intuitively play it. You know, when you're using, and this isn't a plug for any of these places, we don't get any money from, but when you're using Audible or the Apple audiobook app and stuff like that, like they just work. And it took Apple a while to get there actually, because I remember the first couple audiobooks I got on Apple years ago. You'd like stop someplace and you'd go in and you'd be in a meeting or whatever and you'd come out and it wouldn't save your spot. So you're like in the middle of a 6-hour book.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And it's just abandoned.
Actually, that wasn't very long ago.
That I remember like three, you compl- 4 years ago.
No. That was months. That was like less than a year ago you were complaining about that.
Nah, it's longer than that.
Because you were saying
iOS 11 that they gave it the big reboot. Anyway, it works great now.
Yeah, it gets frustrating when you're just listening to a book or a podcast on a website and or just in the
I can't
in the browser, and then it won't save the spot, you and you keep going back, and you gotta. I mean, it's just
even YouTube doesn't save it very well.
You get used to the functionality of YouTube. You have to go back to your history to get it. If you go into your home feed, it won't be the proper one.
I download a lot of YouTube.
Yeah. Well, you probably still have to find it in your history, as opposed to if you see it in the normal feed, it won't be your updated version.
It seems like sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes it like forgot a time.
Yeah.
So it's at the time it was before you listened to it the last time.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's and I mean that's one of my top five books for sure. I find it harder and harder. I mean, 100 books later. I would say I read like 100 books in the first like 37 years of my life. And then the last year and a bit, I've read another 110 or so.
Yeah.
And I can't even, cause I was talking about it when I was out last week, trying to talk about favorite books, and it's like Nice Guy. There's different categories and I can't place, I gotta go top 10 at least. Because there's a lot of moving parts in my favorite books.
Yeah.
And I mean, you read some and there's parts of them that are super profound. And, I mean, that Surrender Experiment book jumped up into my top 10 for sure right away. We should go check that place out down in Florida. That'll give us an excuse
to visit Adam.
To go visit Adam. And speaking of that,
I visited Adam in Florida before.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, he helped me get some supplements once. Yeah.
Where were you going, on a cruise or something?
Yeah.
Was that that Disney cruise?
St. Augustine, yeah. No, it wasn't a Disney cruise, no.
But. Was that Christmas one you did with the whole family?
No.
Oh.
No.
And then, I think we had Laser Pig went down and met up with Adam one time.
Yeah.
My buddy John Hayes, I think, met up with over at Inner Traditions, met up when he was down in Florida. I'll have to get down there.
He's been a huge help with our show, the Grammarica show, and with this podcast. I mean, Adam's just dedicated to helping out with the podcast in whatever way he can, and it's been invaluable, his service to this community and us personally.
We love him, and you guys should too, and enjoy the chat.
No, I gotta read some stuff here.
Okay, you're going to go through that?
So he was born in a coastal town in West Palm Beach, Florida. Of course, he grew up around the ocean, and his early years were filled with books from Arthur C. Clarke, Nintendo, and high school drama. Ah, that explains a lot. After failing out of community college, he went to broadcasting school and worked as a traffic producer for radio and television. And after being jaded by the conventional broadcast industry, he fell into home remodeling and later loss prevention management. And he currently hosts two podcasts, The 13 Questions, of course, and Cat in the Box, which is a podcast on remote viewing, where him and Justin talk about remote viewing, and they actually do experiments every week on remote viewing. So you can learn more about Adam at catinthebox.space. There you have it. Thanks for all your help, Adam.
Enjoy the questions and mostly the answers. I'm Adam Loyle.
All right, Adam Loyle, welcome to the 13 Questions. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing, Mr. Graham?
I'm okay. I'll try not to sniffle. I got a bit of a cold, but it's good to finally hook up with you and do this.
Yeah, it's a long time coming. We've both done a lot of reading and asking of these questions already, so I think you said you were nervous, and I was like, what's he got to be nervous about? And I'm sweating over here, so...
Now that it's your turn, you're nervous too.
I'm nervous, yeah. I shouldn't be, but I think it's because I've spent so much time hearing other people's questions and being impacted by their answers that like I've built this this mountain that I need to climb that I probably don't need to climb.
Exactly. You're probably already halfway up.
Sliding down.
So question number one, what was the best advice ever given to you?
And would you modify it at all today?
I would not modify it at all today. And I bounce between two pieces of advice. Both of them were given to me by police officers. And the first one was, if you treat me like an asshole, I'm going to treat you like an asshole. And that was so to the point that when you are in situations where, you know, there's combative people, aggression, any that cuts through the bullshit. And it's such a great phrase. And for so many things in life that just, I don't know, I always carried that with me. And the other one was after I dealt with this really complicated situation involving somebody who was running away from her husband and ended up going back to him in an abusive situation and just being part of all this. And it was a real emotional thing. It went on for hours, had to get the police involved, talking about Baker acting. It was the point is, the officer said to me, you know, don't get more involved in people's business than you need to be. And that's always stuck with me because I got really emotionally invested in it. And, you know, when all that stuff happened with that person, instead of being the stoic one off to the side that's able to evaluate things, I was, you know, just depressed and upset and angry and just all these different mixed feelings. And so, yeah, I always took that as I don't want to ever have to feel that way. I don't want to have to carry somebody else's burden.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, just knowing you for the last few years or whatever, did that lead you into more of like police encounters? Because you seem like you are somewhat aware of what's going on with the police in your area. I don't know how to say it properly.
Oh, well, I used to be in loss prevention.
But I know you're pretty aware that there's a lot of police abuse and stuff.
Yeah, I was in loss prevention. So I was dealing with police officers every day. Wasn't on the caliber or near the danger of what they were doing, but I got involved in doing like interviews, interrogations, investigations, hiding hidden cameras. So just, I was always involved with having people, you know, arrested or things in that realm. So I've always been privy to that, seeing the sour stuff that happens behind the scenes and the individuals that you deal with in different counties. And then, you know, when you see it in the news and you see the blatant abuses, it's real, real hard for me not to feel that same involvement because, I don't know, it hurts when you see people getting abused. So yeah, I'm always paying attention to what's happened with the local PDs.
Yeah. So what was number two? What was the most important lesson you learned from your parents?
My mom taught me a lot, mostly through her actions. I remember we were going down the highway and there was kind of like a giant tractor trailer and it was hauling rocks and it didn't have any of them strapped down. These were like giant pebbles, like 2-inch pebbles that you'd lay out for a walkway. And they were in plastic bags. And one of the bags flew off the truck and it landed right in front of the car and ended up breaking the windshield and putting a bunch of dents in the car. But my mom was worried that it almost went through the windshield. And she's like, well, you know, it's either going to hit me or you. And so she chased down this driver and forced him off the side of the road and then got the police involved, got a ticket done, you know, bulldogged into the company, you know, to make sure that they paid all the insurance because they were refusing. And so that was one lesson, like, you know, just, you know, don't be afraid to take on a giant. You can do it. And then the other was more with like authoritative figures. In when it came to being in school, everybody's had an example or an experience where they had a bad teacher or a teacher that was unfair. But my mom would go to bat for me. You know, she believed things that I said. I had a teacher that was kind of loopy and she was giving me really bad grades and I was contesting the reasons for the grades. And we go into the meeting. Because my mother says, well, if this is the case, you know, let's set this up. So she takes it all the way to the top, all the way to the vice principal, you know, right into, you know, making sure that this situation gets corrected. There was another time I had the same situation where it was, you know, setting up a meeting with the guidance counselor. And I guess my point is my mother was never afraid to go to the top, never afraid to chase down and go, look, if something's really being done wrong, you know, 100% energy into it. Don't stop. And so
yeah,
I've
for the right reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's those things that you almost get obsessive about, but it's because you know you're doing the right thing. You know, you might be like, I can stand back and go, am I being an asshole, or, you know, am I doing this for the right reasons?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a great lesson from Mom.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one. What book has been the most influential on your life and why?
I'm going to give an answer that I think everybody gives, which is more than one book.
Yeah, exactly.
But really, it's because there's books that have had impacts at different points in my life. So yeah. When I was a teenager, it was the Rama series by Arthur C. Clarke. I was in math class reading those, English class, you know, after school. I read them, I think, four times all the way through when I was in school, the series. Then there was The Field by Lynn McTaggart.
Yeah.
That one really changed my perspective on everything. That was where all the things that I kind of believed in on the side came together with science, and it started to make sense. It's what flipped my paradigm from being a complete science guy. And, you know, I loved aliens and I loved ghosts, but, you know, I always said that there's a science behind it. You know, there's energy or electricity, there's an unknown factor. But this took all the other crazier things and just tied them together. And so that really changed my life in a fundamental way from a paradigm view. The Secret, which is almost, I should skip past The Secret. The Secret did a lot of good things for me. I had a very profound experience in which I used it to stop wearing glasses, which is where I got into the idea of mantras and the metaphysics and being able to change your world, because my mom had recommended me the book and I read it. And I had a bunch of synchronicities right in the middle of reading it. In one chapter, I was looking at an image and I said, man, that looks a lot like a dog. And then I immediately hear dogs barking. And then I continue to read into the paragraph and it talks about, you know, from like the old tales, like sirens screaming. But then as soon as that goes off, I hear like sirens in the road. And it was all within just like, you know, click, click, click. And so I said, okay, well, then the next sentence, it starts talking about putting your intention out for getting like a cup of coffee. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to not wear glasses anymore. And the next day I stopped wearing glasses. My vision wasn't terrible. I was nearsighted in one eye and farsighted in the other. So my eyes would focus at different distances and I would get headaches. But all my problems with reading and focusing disappeared after that, which for me was a pretty big deal, because as a kid, I had to go to like eye therapy and wear special glasses and do ocular training where they'd like get strengthen the muscles in my eyes. And then I'm going to jump to Napoleon Hill, and Darren recently recommended this book to me. And this has been the big game changer for me. It's really where I've started to put mantras to use every day. If anybody's knows about The Secret is based on the book of Napoleon Hill, and it's called Think and Grow Rich. If anybody's out there and you haven't read it, highly, highly recommend it. This is a book that I wish I had been given when I was 14, because I feel like it would have given me a perspective on the world that I have now that, man, it could have jumped me 20 years ahead in worldview. But yeah, so those are my books.
So the Rama one, which one is that? Is that the one where they end up in that big spaceship where they can't even find their way around in there, like this big black ball or something like that?
Yeah, it's a cylinder. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I listened to that on audio not too long ago. It was really good.
So you just listened to the first one then, Rendezvous with Rama?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Are the other ones good too?
Or? Oh, they're great. They're actually written with Gentry Lee, who is a NASA scientist or JPL scientist. I think he worked for NASA. And I want to say he was involved with the telemetry for the Galileo missions. I could be wrong on that, but he's been involved with some pretty major space missions, satellites going out. And he wrote Arthur C. Clarke. I'm going deep here into the geek. I'm sorry. He wrote Arthur C. Clarke to write a follow-up to the book, because when Arthur C. Clarke wrote the first book, he had never considered having a sequel. So the following books are written much more in the Gentry Lee style, but they're my favorite books. Yeah. If I didn't have those books as a kid, I don't know what I would have done. That was the story that just hooked me.
Yeah. And then The Secret. Yeah. I read that too. My sister had a bunch of synchronicities with The Secret and visitation from my deceased father, actually, I think, talking about it as well, which was really interesting. So, yeah, I could see that. having an impact.
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with The Secret. You know, I think it is a wonderful entry tool for people. And if you find that, you should go to Napoleon Hill and, you know, take the expert course.
Yeah. What daily rituals or habits do you have? And would you recommend them for others?
Absolutely. I'm going to go to auto suggestion or mantras. I've had some pretty good success. Actually, I started mantras after reading or listening to Scott Adams' book. I can't remember the name of it. It's the one with the shoe on the front.
How to fail at everything and still succeed or something like that?
How to fail at everything and still win big.
Yeah.
I think is what it's called. Yeah. But he talks about mantras, you know, just in the very simple manner of, hey, you don't have to believe them. Try them. And if they work, don't question it. And I believe in stuff like that anyways, but I never really put that to a daily task. And so that worked out. And after reading Think and Grow Rich, I've started doing the auto suggestion as directed in there daily. And I'm, you know, knock on wood, hoping that that it continues to, you know, do that wonderful thing that when you ask the universe over and over for something and you want it, it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. What's the next one here? If I were to ask your best friend, what is the one thing they would say you need to work on the most and why? It's a tough one.
Procrastination. I procrastinate with everything. We've been planning this for weeks. And when we went to record yesterday, I was writing down my answers into paper form just to have keynotes so I don't forget anything for ideas. And I was doing that an hour before we recorded. So that's my biggest thing. I'm always kicking the can to the last second.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes I do that too. I just wait till it's, you know, then it has to be done. And then I have to really hurry up and get it done.
Yeah, and it's stupid because once I get something done, then I feel a sense of relief when it's done. And then I feel all relaxed. But then it's like an email comes in and I'm like, I don't want to respond to that email. I don't even want to look. And then I'm thinking about the email. Yeah. And so, you know, I don't know. Yeah, procrastination. I need to just get off my butt and do stuff.
What are you most curious about?
Consciousness. I think a lot about like circles. You know, if you go into the forest, you can tell maybe another animal is further away because of how the birds are acting, or you can hear how the insects are, you know, sounding to give you ideas about, you know, weather that's coming or different events that they sense. And, you know, you look at like electric fields, you know, you think a heartbeat is just something that's near you, but, you know, the electrical energy propagates out feet away from you. Well, how far does that go? I think a lot about things like that. What's behind the veil? You know, listening to like Randall Carlson talk about all the things that are perfectly aligned with the moon and silver and atomic numbers and all these things in our world, just they're like massive synchronicities everywhere you look. And, you know, that's what makes me wonder. It really makes me wonder if those are artifacts of how things exist or if they're, you know, signposts.
Yeah, or our creation. You know,
I watched Arrival again today. So, yeah, I've been really into that thought of, you know, live in the moment. But if it really is all about the moment. And, you know, time doesn't have a, you know, it's not linear. Then, yeah, it really makes me think about how I act at every moment. It makes me feel like a loser sometimes when I know I'm not doing something to the best of my ability. I've been doing a podcast on remote viewing, and you're remote viewing things that are happening at distances that shouldn't exist. We're doing things, you know, where there's time separations and missing information. And when you really start to think about that, then, yeah, I don't know. I get lost in the idea of how deep your mind goes into that consciousness and the veil and how everything's connected. And I probably get lost in that thought a whole lot more every day than I should.
Yeah. No kidding. Especially because you do it for the show. So you're kind of purposefully putting yourself there at least weekly as well, right?
Well, yeah. And here's why I love it. Dowsing. I love dowsing rods, because they taught me so much, because it's something that you'll go up to people and ask them if they believe in dowsing, go to hand them a pair of dowsing rods, and they won't pick them up and they won't use them. And the first time I made my own pair and I walked over an electrical cord, boom, they cross. And I'm like, well, okay, well, that I'm clearly not manipulating this. I've got all the proof I need. And remote viewing does that to me. When I can read the information that I shouldn't have, that's hidden in an encrypted file by, that's created by a third person that's giving it to somebody. Or if it's,
double blind kind of stuff.
Yeah. Because we were doing those with Ren Collier when he was doing his remote viewing experiments. And we do it weekly with Justin and I. And then we start to get crazy synchronicities and overlaps and we draw decks of cards at the same time and picking the same cards. And that's magic to me. You know, there's a manipulation of reality. And so yeah, you're right. When you start doing that, you're proving that magic in the world exists, and it really kind of gets your head lost. It's hard to think about going out and getting a job when, you know, you're thinking about being able to see through distances and get information. And I don't know. Yeah, I think about consciousness a lot.
Have you ever had a really embarrassing or humiliating experience in life?
I have. Two actually that stand out, and I love them because it's not that I pride myself on not being able to be embarrassed, but I think it's a great quality, because so many people are embarrassed over things that they shouldn't be embarrassed over. So when I was in high, and like anybody else, these are, you know, stories from when you're younger, because, you know, once you break that limb off, it doesn't grow back the same. But when I was a teenager in high school, we were doing dress rehearsal in the gym West Side Story, the musical. And I was talking to my best friend, Tabitha, and we're changing. I pull my shorts down and my boxers didn't have a button on the flap, and I'm hanging out. And she's just looking down, gets a goofy look on her face. I don't even notice. And then I look at her face, realize what's happening. And then I look around, get everything reset. Mortified, absolutely mortified, terrified that more people saw it. Then she started teasing me afterwards, saying, I'm going to draw it and show it to everybody. And so that kind of calloused me up pretty young. I that's actually seems similar to yours. They both happened in a gym with our shorts.
Yeah, but, that's pretty funny.
And then the second one was in my young adult life. I was doing, I was a radio producer for traffic reporting. And one of my jobs was going on for a couple AM stations and reading the traffic reports in between, like the news that they were reading, because they were AM talk shows. And I was saying the gas station, Sunoco, but I wasn't saying Sunoco, I was calling it Sunoco. And I had no idea that I was misenunciating this word. And so I've been doing this for months, reading off the copy. And in the middle of one of my interviews, the lady who did all the TV stuff next to us, she turns to me, flips on, plugs into my mic while I'm live on the air and goes, "Hey, Adam, you know it's called Sunoco, right?" I was like, God damn it. And, you know, granted, it was only a few thousand people listening, but that one really, really, really embarrassed me. But it was good. And it was also really funny, because I look back at it now, I'm like, she knew for months. She sat there for months waiting for this one moment, the look on her face. So, but yeah, that was my most embarrassing two moments.
Yeah, it's funny how when you're younger, that, you know, that has more of an impact. Like now that probably wouldn't, I don't know. I mean, we tease each other about mispronunciations all the time, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, now it's funny. I love when Darren grinds you for saying Nassau, you know, it's not an embarrassment. Now, if you walked into the gym and your pants ripped, you just laugh it off and, you know, it would be that.
Exactly.
Like, what are you going to do? Like, come on.
So who's your most positive influence, or who are your role models in the past or in the future? Or sorry, in the present.
Uh, My dad's a big one. He was always kind of a MacGyver guy, always figuring stuff out, doing new things. You know, he went up to our some friends of us let us have access to their beach condo when they weren't using it, and so we'd go up there occasionally on weekends. And there was like a leak in the plumbing or the roof, and so my dad used a bucket to turn a regular vacuum cleaner into a wet vac. You know, just seeing little engineering things like that as a kid really impressed me. Arthur C. Clarke was also another one. Strangely enough, I love the idea that he had, you know, created this idea of the communication satellite, the geometry and the math and how you would do it and where you would put the satellites. You know, that was all originally from his mind. And then he went on to do, I think it was in Imperial Earth, somebody will probably call me out on this. But he basically gives the design for the space shuttle, or not the space shuttle, but the original Apollo rockets, the way that they're set up to go. And I've read somewhere that some of the scientists found his work influential in their designing when they were designing the ships, because, you know, when you do it for the first time, you don't really know where to go. And then, you know, the guy is predicting the internet and telephones. And when you read Rama, there's a lot of stuff that really starts clicking to come true. So his ability to read the future always impressed me. And then, of course, he did Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious Universe, which had all the weird stuff that I was totally into as a kid. So, yeah.
Was there any divine connection with him, or any kind of spiritual aspect there? Like, was he getting that? You think that was he literally, you think, foreseeing the future, or did he have some connection? Was he downloading? I mean, you hear so much about that nowadays, but I wonder about those people back then. Like, it seems like they had a more than just an intuition about what's going on.
I think everybody kind of does that. Everybody has premonitions. Everybody, you know, gets an inkling of somebody who's going to call moments before it happens. You know, imagine somebody tripping and then it does, something that appears behind the corner that you shouldn't have known was there. So I think we all kind of do it, and we have varying degrees of awareness. I know he was a staunch atheist and, you know, didn't believe that there was anything like that too, as at least in everything that I've seen of his. But
right.
You know, when you're part of the system, I'm not sure you can remove yourself from it.
Yeah, exactly. So what is your greatest fear? And how did you overcome it? Or how do you overcome it?
I haven't overcome it. And it's claustrophobia.
Really?
Yeah. It's funny. Now that we're into the metaphysics, that's the one thing that really makes me wonder about past lives, or like,
that's what I was
Rupert
ask.
Drake's morphic resonance, because I've been in enclosed spaces and I panic, like in sand when it falls down on me at the beach, like I go into panic mode. And the reason I say I haven't overcome it is because whenever you get a head cold, the most terrifying thing for me is when my nose clogs and my ears clog and I can't breathe and I can't hear. That to me it's the same thing as claustrophobia. So that's one I wish I knew I could overcome and find a way. Cause they always say exposure therapy is great. If you know you're scared of spiders, you know, get a spider. And I'm not scared of other situations, but when it comes to that one, it seems that whenever I get sick, I still, you know, I'll find myself having to jump up and, you know, kind of run around to get the energy out. Otherwise I'll just, I don't want to say have a mini panic attack, but you know, well, if you have claustrophobia, you understand.
Yeah, I was thinking right away about past lives. I mean, I feel like phobia is like one of the best ways to heal them through past life regression. I mean, even just acknowledging a past life that had something to do with that. I mean, geez, I was talking to my friend Celia the other day when we were talking about healing and the past life stuff. And there's just even the acknowledgement, like you don't even have to do a lot of work after that. It seems like just the acknowledgement and the awareness of that being a possibility seems to have a lot of healing with it.
I'd believe it. I've had a couple of dreams that I've remembered so vividly where I woke up where there was different languages going on and I was partaking, and it was so real that it made me wonder. It made me wonder if it wasn't kind of a, I don't know if you've ever had this, if you've had like a helicopter flyover, whenever that happens to me, like, I shrink, like I get like my adrenaline jumps and I kind of drop like half a step and put my arms out and I look up. It feels like there was a giant bird coming after me. And I've always taken that as well. If I'm feeling that from some ancient, you know, predator in the past, you know, what else am I feeling? What other experiences have been passed forward into me? So,
yeah, exactly. Or it could just be from, who knows, World War II or something.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. What quality do you most admire in a man and why?
I admire a man who is kind and who's nice, composed, doesn't fly off the handle, doesn't get angry, very physically strong, skilled, meaning able to defend themselves without having to go to extremes, knowing their own strength. Being able to defend others. I find myself scared sometimes of being in situations where I've been before, where I know that physically I couldn't have done anything. You know, unless I had a weapon, there wasn't anything I could do. And I admire somebody who takes the time and the energy and the effort to learn a combat skill, to learn discipline, you know, to train their body, to train their emotion, and come out with a person that's able to be that guy that will protect you, you know, that can pick you up and pull you out from in front of a car, that, you know, could protect you from that pit bull that's coming at. Like, there's people out there that have this, and I don't know. I really admire that, probably because I feel, you know, so much of the opposite in myself in that regard.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's a trend where people are scared to defend others now, like that it's happening less? I don't know if trend is the right word, but does it seem like that quality is diminishing?
It might.
I saw a video the other day of an old guy being harassed by a young person. There's a bunch of people sitting there in the coffee shop just watching, you know, like that kind of thing. You're like, what? Like, I mean, maybe I wouldn't go out and do something, but I'd like to think I would intervene a little bit if it was just obviously.
This is why I respect people that have those skills, because they can go out there and handle that situation where, you know, you or I can't speak for you, but if I went out there, I'm going to be legitimately worried that somebody's going to punch me in the face or pull a knife on me, and that I'm not going to be able to adequately defend myself. But there's some people out there, you know, that can defend themselves against 99.9% of the other human beings on the planet,
yeah,
and have really good reasoning skills and a good sense of handling things. I also really appreciate somebody who can go into a situation and command the situation through their actions and through their words. You see this sometimes, there'll be one person who can calm down a rowdy room, and then there's some people who can't. And I admire a man that can take that energy within themselves and lay it on another person where they, oh, I get it, and I'm going to listen to this guy, and he's right. I don't know what that energy is. I certainly don't have it, but when I see it, it warms me.
Nice. What institution or society or structural aspect of modern life would you change given the chance?
This is my favorite question. I don't even know how to answer it directly, but I'm going to answer it in a sideways way. Whatever we could do in society structurally so that people would be honest and tell the truth. And by the truth, I mean not that there should be absolute truths for anything, but that we don't purposely lie. We don't try to obfuscate. I look at so much of what's going on in science as just people lying. You know, if we all told the truth, we would be so many things when it comes to our health, the environment, our bodies, space, science. If you just look at how research is done and, you know, it's all about grants and money and all the, you know, the people that are getting caught, you know, forging the research and changing it. And if we eliminated all of that, if we could just get people to be truthful to one another, I mean, I don't know how we could engineer that, but to me that would solve almost every ill in the world. If we were truthful to each other,
it happened.
Yeah, I would know exactly how you feel and you would know exactly how I feel. And we wouldn't have big divides on the left and the right and people not talking to each other. And there'd be so many different aspects. But that's the one that I always come back to is if everybody could just be truthful, then humanity would have the best chance of survival, whether it's against, you know, protecting ourselves from some sort of cataclysm or asteroid or pollution or societal collapse. There's so many things that it would just, I don't know. I always come back to truth.
Do you think that it's more of a human problem or a structural problem?
I'd probably say it's both. Because when you look at humans are very structured. They have patterns. And people do things for reasons and they follow those reasons. And you can get people to do things by having them see those reasons in a different way. I should probably say where I'm coming at this from is when I used to do interrogations for retail, somebody was caught, you know, causing loss to the company through some means. Generally, I would go into a room with a person who knew that they did something that could get them arrested and that I was going to talk to them about it. But what they didn't know was that after talking to them about it, that they were going to tell me everything. They were going to sign a statement, and then they were going to thank me. And many people would get upset or cry. And when you really start to understand that you can speak to a person in such a way that you get them to do what you want, and it's not really persuasion. It's, you know, how do you justify what you've done? Because you want to tell the truth. People deep inside are all truthful. One of the truths about people, I think not all people, they're psychopaths, but people are always truthful. And people will always justify why they've done something. My mother has this disease and I need the money. You know, the company is always screwing me over. They don't pay me enough. I can't, you know, feed my kids. And so it's justifications for them. And the reason I give those examples is because it's usually something like that in somebody's mind. Or they've equated it in such a manner. But when you turn their views around and you ask them questions and you get an idea of where they're at emotionally and what's impacting them, people want to tell you. And it's a burden off of them. So I don't know. I think that those things are both structural in nature with institutions and schools, the Napoleonic system and things like that. But they're also within us. There's also those same sorts of structures and patterns that get built within our minds that make us act in certain ways, you know, and then come into situations with one point of view that can get flipped completely by somebody quite literally reading from a script, watching your body language, asking you certain questions at certain times, asking other questions at certain times, and being able to tell when you're lying or not by your mannerisms.
Yeah.
So people are patterns and those patterns propagate. So when you get bad patterns, those bad patterns keep going. And so, I kind of ran off the rails there, but you know, I think it's both.
No, that's good. So what is the most courageous thing you've ever done in your life and seen?
Every time I read this question, I flash back to not the most courageous thing I've ever seen, but the most cowardly thing I've ever seen, which I'll explain why it ties in here in a second. But I was in a Publix many years ago. I was probably in my early 20s, probably 22, 23. And there was a kid who, probably 8 or 9, got Riley with the shopping cart and he flipped it over. It tossed over and I went to help him and his dad came over, big muscular guy, and got really angry, like violent angry, like scared me. And instead of standing up for the kid, I stepped away and just kind of backed off because I was scared. And I was looking at the kid when this was going on, looking into his eyes. So I always think back to that because I was such a coward. And so now I'm almost more aggressive in my mind when you see situations popping up. And it probably helped me when I got into, you know, doing loss prevention and things, because I'll you know, if something's not right and it needs to be right, you know, you got to do it. You know, it doesn't matter. And that one is something I always think about. So that always makes me think about the most courageous thing I could do sometimes is facing the most scared thing you can, because let's be selfish. Afterwards, I have to live with that. Like, you have to live with what you didn't do sometimes. And, you know, that to me is a bigger burden than worrying about getting punched in the face or hurt seriously or killed, you know?
That's a good one. I mean, it's for me, the risk is, like, I totally agree with you. That's fantastic. But the risk to me is that you're missing, or I would be, if I was in that situation, I might be missing context, that, you know, like catching only half the story. Or do I throw myself on the line like that if you're wrong, you know, then you've sort of doubled down and messed it up even more. That's my fear in that.
Yeah.
Like, what if it's not the right thing to do? You know, what if you were deceived unintentionally or intentionally? And, you know,
it's a burden. Yeah.
Yeah. So what rule do you have for yourself that you never break? And why do you think that's important?
I won't manipulate people anymore. One of the things that I used to be very good at coming from that background would be able to, you know, ask questions, say things in a certain way, presume information for somebody so that you direct them towards something you want. And the problem is, when you get your mindset into doing that, I can't turn it off. It becomes almost like a game. So, you know, I didn't like it because it would just be, you know, simple things like saying things in a certain way to watch the movie you want to watch, to go to dinner where you want to go. And I just didn't like that. I really didn't like that I would, you know, use my mind in that way. So Angie hates it now because I'm the complete opposite. I am very indecisive and refuse to answer things, not refuse to answer things per se, but I don't like to make decisions because I have a real hard time it's not that I have a hard time, I should say. It's, I don't ever want to be the person that is manipulative. So if I really don't care, I'd rather not have any say in it at all, because if I do, then I'm going to want to make it go my way and I can.
Yeah, that's a good point. When did that change over?
When I left loss prevention. Yep. Changed my career, got out of that business. I got out of that world. I found a nice way to cure or severely eliminate my migraines that definitely changed my worldview and perspective. And that, I think all that kind of tied together, but yeah, it was an environment that, you know, when you're in that situation where you're having to get people to tell you things they don't want, that's just not a very good social place for me to be in my mind. I'd rather be around people, you know, hanging out, laughing, being productive, you know, not trying to figure out what you did wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
So yeah, I won't manipulate people anymore.
Well, that's the last question. A bonus round for members is coming up. Thank you for joining us on the 13 questions. You can go to 13questionspodcast.com, become a member and get access to the premium podcast, which is the extended versions here, which sometimes is longer and even better than the initial free version. There's communication writing courses as well as prompted journaling exercises and forums and the rest of all the extra questions like I mentioned. Also, the ability to open source these into our feed by yourself, like interviewing your own people for our subscribers and putting it into the feed. We've had a couple people do that already, and it's been fantastic. And I think it's going to be a way where people can actually start doing their own podcasts and getting them in here from people that they admire and they want to hear from. All right, welcome back to the bonus round. So Adam, what would you, I'm not going to ask you that one right now. Just wait. Ooh, that's the secret one.
I get a secret question?
That's the surprise question that you haven't got, that you don't know about yet.
Oh,
What would you tell your teenage self?
Do what you love doing and that's it. I feel like probably in the last 2 or 3 years is where I finally figured that out, that I've been treading, you know, treading water. I get into a place, get into a job, you know, find it in some way. And then I just get really good at it. And, you know, it's, why don't you do what you want to do? Because I was always kind of raised as, you know, find a job, work for somebody, go to school, you know, not do what you love and make that into it so that that's all you do. It's never work. And when you're a kid, it's a lot easier. You know, you have the resiliency, you have the ability to, you know, lose sleep, eat shit food, do things like that. You got the financial support of people around you, the ability to take out loans. And that would be the other thing. I would also tell myself, don't get a credit card. Because I was given a credit card when I was in high school at 17, and it was not a good thing for me to get involved. I'm finally out of it. Got all my debt consolidated, but I got a few more years of paying that off. And yeah, it stinks having something from when you were, you know, in your teens and early 20s that's haunting you when you're in your 30s. So I would definitely tell myself that, you know, do what you love doing and don't get a credit card.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's funny because you almost answered the secret question there too. So, what turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Making things, seeing the world differently than other people. Probably my greatest fault that I've never been able to find a way to use is I connect things. If you're talking to me, sometimes I'll bounce from subject to subject that seems not connected, but it'll have some weird string or idea in between. And you know, I like the ability to connect things where most people don't, because, you know, I find just whether it's in conversation or discussion about ideas that, you know, those dog legs and those left turns, although, you know, they may often just be for more entertainment and speculation purposes, really do lead to broadening ideas, thoughts, further discovery, being directed to truths that you find to be more relevant in your life. So yeah, I really enjoy making things and doing that. So creative, whether it's art, audio, podcasts.
What is your single greatest driving force in life, and what do you do to try and further it?
I guess it would be family, pets. The one thing I won't ever do is I won't ignore my pets. I've got a rule that if any of my cats ask me for attention, I will give them the attention, no matter what. I had a cat who died of cancer, and she was peeing on everything. And so I was, you know, disciplining her and, you know, like shunning her, and I didn't realize that she was sick. And then she got really bad cancer. And so I've always kind of had that, again, kind of like with the kid, right? It's something that is there that I won't do it. I will always make the time. I will always make the attention, and I will always, you know, try to enjoy as much of the moment as possible, because, you know, when you haven't, I don't know, I think about that and I'm like, I never want to feel that way again. I never want to hold that burden again. I want this to never be something that has to cross my mind again, which also surprisingly, you know, at least from a guilt perspective, helps me deal with it, because I can say, well, you know, this was a lesson, and you better damn well make sure you make the best use of that lesson as possible, because if they're suffering because of what you needed to learn, then turn it into more light. You know, and hell, if there's something to the fact that time is really not what we understand and things go on forever and there's past lives, things like that really may make a difference, really might make the world a better, perfect place in the future.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's difficult to do, especially depending on the cat. I mean, I got three cats and I try and do the same thing, but sometimes I just have to ignore them. Like in the kitchen trying to cook something, they're just, this is when they want all the attention.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one of them can ride around on my shoulders for a bit, but the other one can't, because she always got two sharper nails and she doesn't know how to ride properly up there. She just wants to grab onto the skin. Yeah, it's pretty nasty. What do you most often choose to ignore?
That's a tough one. It seems to be the kicking the can type of thing. It's a little bit of everything. It's the things that, you know, it's funny. It's little stresses that when they build up, turn into a mountain, and you can easily keep them from being a mountain. So for, yeah, for me, it's just, it's the little things that are attached to procrastinating. I'm always, it always seems that I'm pushing something out of my mind, or, you know, I'll check that email later. I'll do this. And eventually I'm going to do it, but yeah.
Yeah. So what do you hope people will say at your funeral?
Oh, I hope that there's nothing that people say at my funeral that they don't say to me first, which this should also go into something that I always make sure I do. I always make sure to give compliments and tell people, like, if I think somebody's doing a really good job, I'll go out of my way to tell them and make sure they know. Because I think so much of the time, like, I have no idea. Like, I have my own personal view, but I can be being a complete asshole and not realize it sometimes until somebody checks you on it. Well, you know, I'd like people to tell me, you know, their real view of me. So I always try to tell people, you know, or check people, you know, if somebody's doing something that, you know, like, you feel to be destructive in some way or negative, then, you know, I like it when people say that to me. And I guess I would hope that, you know, at my funeral, there would be nothing that I hadn't heard that I already didn't know, that those things would have been said, whether positive or negative.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. What can you do today to improve?
Stop procrastinating. Hands down. That's the one thing I could do. Absolutely.
And to what faults do you feel most indulgent?
Oh, entertainment, video games, as you know, 1980s kid as that sounds. You know, I always enjoy diving deep into a movie or pulling up I made the mistake at the recommendation of Grimstake listening to the Retronauts podcast. So I've been diving deep into 80s stuff. So I recently pulled out SimCity on my 3DS, which I purchased. Nice. And I had played SimCity 2000. So many hours in that on my PC back in the day. But I'd apparently started the game, went through the tutorial, and I forgot I bought it. I never, for some reason, I put it away and never played it. So that was like 6 days ago, and it's now 2023, and I started in 1900. So yeah, I sometimes really like getting my mind, you know, integrated into the story in a video game. It's almost therapeutic. It's the same way of diving into a book. The problem is, you know, you can overindulge in, you know, everything in moderation, including moderation. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's do this bonus question. The surprise question. So I was going to actually ask you about what your ideal career would be. And you kind of answered that already. But what I wanted to ask instead is, what would you be doing if you didn't have to work for a living? Like, it's not just like right now, but what would you like be doing? Kind of like big picture stuff, not necessarily like daily, but what it could include daily. But if you didn't have to work, what would you be doing?
For one, I would take some time to get my house in order, meaning plants, foliage, lawn, you know, making things much more livable and easy to live, you know, simple upgrades, nothing crazy and complicated, just creating a studio that's really soundproof, you know, that there's, you know, it's not 85 degrees in here when I'm podcasting with you, and when it rains, you know, it gets really noisy. Things, very simple things like that. But moreover, I would do some traveling. I would dive into podcasting more head on. It's going to sound crazy, but, you know, kind of in the way Darren talks about having feeling that you can really leave a mark on the world, I kind of feel that there's a place for me to facilitate or engage information in such a way that it's going to make the world a better place, that I don't really have to worry about my place, but that my skills are needed. So I don't know. It's really somehow just engaging and dealing with people. When it comes to like doing my podcast, the thing that gives me the joy out of it is just thinking about the magic it shows me in life and how just thinking those things can change my perspective. But then I go, okay, well, in the grand scheme of things, you know, if I share that view with other people and they experience the same thing, experience is everything, you know, to me, you know, nobody believes in UFOs until they see a UFO. And then you're a believer because you've had the experience. So that to me is changing the world. It changes the world in profound ways that you can't even understand.
So what, talk about, tell the people about your podcast, and you and Justin do this podcast, right?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a podcast called Cat in the Box. You can find it at catinthebox.space. But essentially all we do each week is create targets. They are mailed out in advance to each other. And then we try to remote view them. And then during the episode, we each go and grab a target from that we've got ready to go. And we put an identifier on it and we ask the listener. And then we ask Justin and myself to, this is how we generally do it. We'll take 15 minutes and we will clear our mind, sometimes use binaural beats, use some brown noise, some sort of static. Some people use chanting or complete quiet. Many things you can do, but the idea is that you're going to train your mind on a location and a time, and you're going to find out information about it. And we've had amazing success, which I would call awesome, massive coincidences and synchronicities, which when you add them up, they really tip the scale in a way that, you know, I don't know, I can't deny it. And that's, so anyways, the reason I like doing it is because when there's people out there that I know, you know, can get that benefit, that they can see that same, this is, even if what we're doing when we remote view is just reading our thoughts across the internet through the subtle movements and knowing somebody so well, to me, that is so extraordinary that at the very bottom of the barrel, which is certainly where I don't think it is, I'm all in. I'm all in because it defies everything that we know about science, everything that we know about communication, and it's happening and we can prove it to ourselves. And on the other end of the scale,
it doesn't matter what's happening, because either explanation, any explanation is astounding.
Exactly. Because I love when people say this, like when we were doing D&D and we were talking about the podcast, and Brody was like, well, yeah, you're just probably just, you know him so well that you knew what he was going to put in the box. You read his body. Well, if that's okay, dude, if I told you that I could do that without the scenario of it being remote viewing, then that's pretty amazing. And to me, that's the low end of the scale. The high end of the scale is that information is accessible throughout distance and throughout time. Yeah. And yeah, when you start to wrap your mind around that, it makes every moment more important, and it makes the things that you do seem important in a way that you may see or feel or have felt again. So I like it.
Yeah. So what was it like for you doing these questions? What was the process like? How was the, was it emotional? Did it bring you back at all?
Yeah, no, it did. There was a few places that, I kept thinking over my cat's death and the scenario around that. And, especially that kid in the cart, I think about that one a lot, but over the past couple of weeks, like taking time to think about how I was going to answer these, it was pretty emotional. It was a pretty emotional thing. And it's really nice to actually have filled them out, because when I do it now, like a self-aptitude test that you kind of take that, hey, we're going to take this career. You have this type of personality. This is almost feels like the same type of thing. Like, it's not that I learned something about myself, but I see a flow, a flavor, some sort of pattern within, the depths and the answers of my question. I, before this, I didn't think about how much I think about consciousness. I didn't think about, how much that is. And just listening to the Ram Feck episode, my gosh, it's thinking about how much I play video games or distract myself or procrastinate on something. I've been doing a lot of reflecting while answering these, and I think I think it's going to be beneficial, because because now every time I listen to an episode or edit a podcast, I'm not only going to be thinking about how I thought I was going to answer the question, I'm going to be thinking about how I actually answer it. And so I'm sure everybody out there that's doing this is going to be doing the same, and they'll probably get just as nervous when they end up recording their own and sending it in. But it's good. It's a good thing. And if you're too embarrassed, do it, because embarrassment is awesome. You don't need that limb.
Right on, man. I guess that's probably a good place to end it. I mean, thanks for doing this, and Thanks to everybody who is listening, because you're obviously a supporter of the show and really appreciate it. Yeah, thanks, Adam, and look forward to chatting again soon.
Well, Graham, thank you very much. I appreciate everything you do for the show, and it was an incredibly fun interview, and I learned something about myself.
What it's all about.
Why is one man rich and another man poor? Why we ain't satisfied? Why we gotta have more? Why your suicide rates on the rest so high? Why I tell you the truth, but you say don't lie? Why is being a good father at an all-time low? Why is it acceptable? Yo, why? I don't know. Why she blame him and he blame her? It's useless. Ask yourself this question. Why you making excuses? Why do parents gotta bury their kids? Why we text and drive, not caring how scary it is? Why it's so hard to forgive and leave the past behind? And if you did, then that's divine. Why don't you help your brother when you see him fall? Why do we act like God don't see it all? Why do we call them black, them white, them Asians and use labels? Now that's racism.
I don't want no Hawaii. Why? I don't want no Hawaii. Yo, why? I don't want no Hawaii. Why? I don't want no Hawaii. Yo, why? I don't want no Hawaii. Why? I don't want no Hawaii. Yo, why? I don't want no Hawaii. Why? I don't want no Hawaii. Yo,
why is there innocent people locked up for life while some people can't say nothing nice? Why do we always gotta question what all of it means? And why won't you follow your dreams? Tell me why. The night when you took my dad, why'd you let me see my grandpa cry? And tell me why. And why do you choose to hide, even though you was born to fly? And tell me why. And why don't we turn from all the hate? And why don't we learn from all mistakes? Why do I keep on wrecking these fat beats? And teachers don't make more than professional athletes. And why?
This should be considered entertainment and not therapy. We hope you benefit from our resources available at 13questionspodcast.com. Thank you for listening.